you beautiful bastards. Hope you've had a fantastic Friday. Welcome back to the Philip DeFranco Show. And if you're new here on Fridays, I do things a little bit different. That's because on Fridays, I like to try to cover more viewer-requested stories from the week. But with that said, let's just jump into it. And the first thing we're going to talk about today is Time Magazine announcing their Person of the Year, which was actually a group they collectively called The Guardians. And among those being named and getting a cover, they had Jamal Khashoggi, the Capital Gazette team, Maria Ressa, and finally, Wa Lone and Joso Wu. And I will say, personally, I found this to be a very fitting People of the Year. We've actually been working on a piece about the killings of journalists, journalist safety in general. At a time in many different places where there's a lot of hostility towards journalists. Sometimes it's from the people, a lot of the times it's from the government. I think it's important to talk about. Right, just something to consider. Worldwide, per the Committee to Protect Journalists, Jamal Khashoggi was just one of 74 deaths in the field of journalism this year. 53 of which they say were confirmed to be targeted for murder, and they say that in years prior, between 2012 to 2016, there was the killing of 457 journalists. And it's not just the number that have died that is concerned. We spoke with Dr. Courtney Ratch, who is the advocacy director for the CPJ, and she hit on the very important note of accountability.
I think one of the most disturbing things about the fact not only that journalists are killed for their work, but they are murdered for their work, and in nearly every case, 9 out of 10, the killers go free.
And also going on to say that it's not just in some war-torn country, right? It's not just journalists going into war zones.
We saw for the first time in the past year that journalists were killed in EU member countries. So just over a year ago, Daphne Caruana Galizia was murdered in Malta. Then Jan Kuciak was murdered along with his girlfriend in Slovakia. And we're still investigating Victoria Marinova, who was murdered in Bulgaria. And we're still trying to see if that was related to her work or not. But what all three of those had in common is that they were investigating corruption or reporting on corruption, and it all had to do with EU funds.
And for the Americans watching, it's important to know that this isn't just a situation somewhere else. Because of the Capitol Gazette shooting this year, the United States has had its deadliest year for journalists since at least 1992. But the threats for journalists are consistently high in other countries around the world, with Reporters Without Borders saying some of the most dangerous countries for journalists are Afghanistan, Syria, and Mexico. But I feel like time-honoring journalists, particularly people like Jamal Khashoggi, really sends a big message that even in death, they are accomplishing something. This is the first time in Time's Person of the Year history that they have honored someone that is no longer alive. And really, the only thing you compare it to is when they did Time's Person of the Century, which was Albert Einstein. I think it really speaks to the idea of we live past this body. What we do, what we try to stand for. That also doesn't mean we should forget those that are still alive and persecuted for their work every day. Yesterday marks the one-year anniversary of the imprisonment of Wa Lone and Joso Wu, people who know not only the danger because of what they've seen from others, their colleagues, but their own personal experience. That's where I'm going to leave that one today. Then in internet/business news, we had two stories, one of something that didn't happen and one that did. The first being about David Dobrik, who of course is just massively successful on this platform. It turns out he wanted to end his vlog series here on YouTube and pursue a Netflix series, but he was rejected.
To convince these execs and like these people that don't know anything about YouTube is very difficult. It's like it's very difficult to go into Netflix and be like, hey, I'm David. And I promise I can make a good show. And then they look at you like, you're a YouTuber. You can't fucking do that.
And I will say, upon hearing this news, I was shocked for two reasons. One, David Dobrik's audience is massive, and the idea that Netflix wouldn't want to try and leverage that is odd, especially given that David Dobrik isn't your normal creator and has proven that he has conversion power. In addition to his 4-minute, 20-second vlogs that do like 4 million minimum, he was also able to move his audience over to his 40-minute per episode podcast, which is currently in the top 20 comedy podcasts for iTunes. So that's enough of me gushing about his analytics. But also, two, I didn't know Netflix said no. Like, Netflix has some fantastic original series, but when you dive deep into that archive, I just kind of assumed they waited outside of Whole Foods and they were like, you got a script? You got something? You got it? Here's some money. So I was kind of surprised, but they also may have changed the game up when they paid $100 million to keep Friends for another year. But yeah, that was something that surprised me. But then in the internet/business news of something that actually did happen, last night we saw a very interesting crossover. We had Thursday Night Football on Twitch, which isn't new, they did that last year. But last night, they had the immensely popular Ninja and several other streamers co-stream the event while commentating over it. Also trying to bring in even more viewership by playing a charity angle, with reportedly the company offering to donate $1 to United Way for every 100 bits that viewers paid out during the game. And here's the thing, did all of a sudden this morning, every outlet was talking about how amazing and massive the numbers were? No, not really. But that said, I personally think that it is very promising that we are seeing tests like this. Every time we see a crossover between between the old guard and the new blood, I think it has a positive thing, even if it's not just outright successful when it first comes out. And while the people they first got involved in this may not be the voices that they want for the long term, I think that it at least showed a good chunk of people that this is something that is being tried out, and so hopefully that will generate some interest. But ultimately, we'll see, and even with potential failure, I think there's a lot to still be learned here. And then let's talk about this just ridiculous story coming out of Florida, and I know you're like, well, it's Florida, of course. This is 100% Gwen Stefani. So late Thursday morning at Lake Brantley High School in Florida, students and staff heard an announcement over the intercom. And the voice over the loudspeaker said there was a code red and said that it was not a drill. And at the same time, teachers also received an automated alert on their phones that read, active shooter reported at Brantley, Building 1, Building 2, and other buildings by B. Schaefer. Initiate a code red lockdown. And after hearing that there was an active shooter, students and staff on campus began to panic as they tried to get to safety. And they did what we've seen others do before. They hid inside of classrooms, closets, under desks, many sending scared messages to loved ones. And after about 30 minutes, administrators finally came over the loudspeaker to say the unannounced code red was over. Students and faculty then tried to resume as normal, but at this point, a screenshot of the message alert sent to teachers began to spread on Snapchat, which then caused panic to continue. And so administrators tried to defuse the situation with a follow-up announcement over the loudspeaker during lunch. And in this announcement, school officials tried clarifying that this code red was just a drill, not a real active shooter situation. And because that announcement included the words code red and people couldn't hear clearly and they only heard those words, many people on the campus believed that there was still an active shooter. Turns out when you announce your drill and say this is not a drill, people get confused. With several students also thinking that nearby construction noises were gunshots, which made them even more terrified. All of that then combined sent the hundreds of students frantically running out the doors. You had students crying and panicking, running for their lives. There's the video of what the lunchroom looked like. Some students jumping fences, running out of the school into neighborhoods nearby. Many of them even seeing the media helicopters flying nearby, which made them think the threat was even more real. We started seeing reports coming out that there was a student that passed out, one having an asthma attack. There were some trampled during the commotion, leaving them physically injured.
The next thing you know, I'm on the floor. Kids don't stop, they don't go around, they just start walking and running and stomping all across me.
Also, this became such a big deal, a nearby private school for students with special needs and disabilities went on code yellow when Lake Brantley went on code red, reportedly just unaware that Lake Brantley's situation was only a drill. And following all of this, obviously students and parents are now outraged at how this drill was handled. Parents saying they weren't notified about this drill until about an hour after it was already over. In a now deleted Facebook post from an hour after the drill took place, the school simply wrote, this morning at approximately 10:21 a.m., LBHS conducted a code red drill on our campus, performance by Seminole County Sheriff's Office. This was only a drill to continue to practice for the security and safety of our students. Thank you. And dozens of angry parents reportedly responded with messages about how the school should have notified them first, about how they were receiving heartbreaking text messages from their scared children. Several parents reached out to the school principal, Trent Daniel, for answers, and she responded with the statement, based on the response of the teachers, staff, students, and Seminole County Sheriff's Office, the code red drill went well. And adding, after the code red drill was over and classes resumed as normal, there was a campus disruption caused by a social media post. The post indicated a possible threat to the campus. Administrators believe the students are responsible for the posting. Specifically, the second incident is believed to have started in the cafeteria. Simultaneously, the post was disseminated to other students and parents. We are investigating the second issue as a disciplinary matter and all responsible parties will be disciplined. But that message then caused even more outrage since it appeared that they were just blaming the students. And so families have been calling for the school to take responsibility and acknowledge that they made a mistake, also demanding that the school investigate what went wrong. But then you had people like Michael Lawrence, who is a spokesperson for the school district. He told the Orlando Sentinel that these surprise fake drills are intended to keep people on their toes. The reason we do unannounced drills are so people will take it seriously. The only way to get their attention and ensure they're doing what they're supposed to do is to do the unannounced drill. But also adding that what happened was a perfect storm of events. But also, the perfect storm had to do with the administration. The school district and sheriff's office said that they had been doing unannounced code red drills for about 3 years. And Lauren said that the best practice for these districts is to have schools immediately contact parents to inform them when they conduct these drills. And he said, unfortunately, the school's administration thought they had sent a message to their families at the conclusion of the drill as they typically do, but the message did not go out. And adding, once families began calling local news media concerned if there was a drill or real incident, it was obvious the message about the event just being a drill obviously wasn't sent. And still, Captain Rick Francis, the director of district safety and security for Seminole County Schools and a member of the sheriff's office, defended everything, saying that the unannounced code red drill was mandated and necessary, saying the drills are the best way to protect schools under his care, saying there's someone out there planning the next event right now, my job is to keep it out of our schools. If that means unannounced code red drills, that's what I have to do. But we've seen parents say that there are ways to teach safety without emotionally scarring these children. And we've even seen people argue that when a real code red happens at Lake Brantley, no one's going to believe it next time. Now, with all of that said, we did get some updates. Seminole County Sheriff Dennis Lemma said the sheriff's office will still conduct code red drills, which are mandated by the state, but will let students, faculty, and parents know the threat isn't real as soon as the drill is announced. The district has also instructed all of its schools to not make drill announcements during lunch hours, and has also told them to avoid using the words code red over school intercom systems, and instead work on new language for announcements after a code red. And as far as my personal opinion on this, I understand their desire for all of these students to take these drills seriously. But I also don't think the best method is to make all these students think that there is an active shooter in the building when it is just a drill. Eventually, it is going to train these kids to not trust when you say, this is not a drill. And so on that horrible day, hopefully it never happens, but if it does arrive, we're going to have students that think it's just a drill. And so for that reason, I really do hope that all of the people in power that are saying, you know, we really care about this, we hear you, we're changing things, I hope that's real and it's not just a bunch of lip service where in the background they're just like, no, fuck these people, it's them, not us. But ultimately, we're going to have to wait and see. And of course, I pass the question on to you. What do you think about this? And then let's talk about this incredibly troubling story out of New York and probably why today's video is going to get hit. Which, actually, a quick thing before I start. Earlier in this week, I promised that I'd give more of a warning before disturbing stories and disturbing videos. So here's that warning. If you'd like to skip this story, here is where in the time code you need to go to. And the story begins this past Friday, where you had 23-year-old Jasmine Headley, who was with her one-year-old son at the Human Resources Administration Center in Brooklyn, New York. And Headley reportedly went there to try to get her child care benefits reinstated after her son's daycare center informed her that the city would no longer be able to pay for his fees. But unfortunately, her visit just turned into complete chaos. And we know about this because someone was luckily there to film all of this, then post it to Facebook, and that's where this story really took off. And again, if you have not skipped this story yet and you do not wish to see this video, please go to the timecode down below. But that said, the caption of the video tries to set the scene, writing there wasn't any more chairs for this lady, which we now know is Jasmine Headley, to sit down, so she sat in the corner on the floor. The security guard came over, said whatever she said to her, and she made the security guard feel dumb, so she called the cops on her, and this was the outcome. Mind you, she had her baby in her hands the whole time. I'm so fucking disgusted with the NYPD. Everybody please share. And so in the video, we see the officers approach Headley. They try to separate her from her son so they can arrest her. Police then start very, very aggressively trying to pull them apart. And the situation then continues to escalate. At one point, one of the officers with a stun gun begins waving it at the crowd around them. Finally, after 2 minutes, they get the child, they arrest her. They take her away. And because of all of this, Headley was charged with resisting arrest, acting in a manner injurious to a child, obstructing governmental administration, and trespassing. But following all of this, there was still a big question of, well, how did all of this even start? We know why she went there, child care benefits. We have the description of that video. And what we would learn later, according to reports, is that after several hours of waiting just to get a child care voucher for her son, Headley was told to either stand or leave the building. She then refused to leave, and it somehow escalated to what we saw on video. And so news of her story quickly spread, and it was just met with heavy criticism on social media from people who were just disgusted by how she was treated. Many arguing that her story was just another example of the criminalization of poverty, with others touching on the dehumanization and shame people experience when needing government assistance. For example, you had New York City Comptroller Scott M. Stringer say, "The cruel treatment of Jasmine Headley and her son is on the mind of every New Yorker. Something we can't ignore is the chilling effect this may have on New Yorkers seeking services. We're forcing people to choose between being dehumanized to access help or stay away altogether." We also saw many elected officials calling for an investigation, this including Attorney General-elect Letitia James and New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand. And following this massive reaction, we saw Brooklyn District Attorney Eric Gonzalez saying that he had opened an investigation into the arrest, and later saying that a review of the case showed that it was not handled properly. To which many people responded, well, I guess he saw the same video that everyone else did. But what we also saw with Gonzalez was that he blamed a Human Resources Administration officer for the incident, saying that it was the HRA officer who escalated the situation when Headley was about to leave the premises. And on top of this, Gonzalez added, "The consequences this young and desperate mother has already suffered as a result of this arrest progress far outweigh any conduct that may have led to it. She and her baby have been traumatized. And adding, she was jailed on an unrelated warrant and may face additional collateral consequences. But also adding, continuing to pursue this case will not serve any purpose. And I therefore move today to dismiss it immediately in the interest of justice. And as far as what he was talking about partially there, according to reports, Headley was arrested in 2016 for credit card fraud charges. And reportedly, she had a warrant out for her arrest after she failed to show up in court. And so in court this week, the deputy chief of the trial division explained that his office did not object to her release over the incident on video, but said that she had missed two or three court appearances in her other case, so officials wanted her detained until they could pick her up on Thursday. Also adding that his office had been flooded with calls from community leaders who promised that she would appear in court in New Jersey on Wednesday to answer to charges there. And that's actually a big note there, because New Jersey doesn't use cash bail anymore. And so judges make a decision on releasing defendants based on whether or not they are likely to return for future court appearances. So that is why it is meaningful. But ultimately, what did the judge say? Well, he said that the video was a horrific scene that was broadcast all over the United States, and he ultimately ordered her release, saying that both Headley's experience during her arrest and the amount of time she has served factored into his decision. So after being held for 5 days in Rikers Island, she was finally reunited with her son and family. After her release, she thanked the public for support, which she was unaware was growing while she was detained.
I'm just so grateful to everyone, and I'm just happy to be free, and I just need to see my boy.
She then appeared in court, where the warrant issued against her was dismissed. She pled not guilty to the unrelated fraud charges, and her lawyer said after the passages of time, the case will be dismissed and ultimately her criminal record will be expunged. And as far as the punishment for the HRA employees involved, reportedly two human resources peace officers have been placed on modified duty since Monday, with the Human Resources Administration Agency's commissioner saying that the staff will be better trained in the future to de-escalate situations before calling the police. And as far as the police involved, the NYPD commissioner defended his officers, saying, "Cops have difficult jobs. They're challenging. Our two cops got there and it was already a tense situation. I saw the body-worn camera footage and it looks like our cops are doing their best to de-escalate it." But also adding that the police officers were relatively new to the job. But then still, in the same statement, once again calling the video absolutely disturbing. But with that whole situation explained, I really do want to pass the question off to you here. What are your thoughts on this? And that's where I'm going to end today's show. Remember, if you like this video, you want to support these daily dives into the news, hit that like button. If you're new here, hit that subscribe button, ring that bell for notifications. Also, if you miss the Thursday PDS or the Thursday Extra Morning News video, you can click or tap right there to watch those. Also, a shout out and thank you to James Krill and all you other beautiful bastards who retweeted out yesterday's show. I see you beautiful bastards out here supporting the show. But with that said, of course, as always, my name's Philip DeFranco. You've just been filled in. I love yo faces, and I'll see you Monday.